Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
It's Monday, November 16th, 2015. It was on this day in 1933 that the United States and what was then called the Soviet Union established diplomatic relations for the first time. And in 1907, on this date, Oklahoma became the 46th American state. Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. Today on the program, we will tell you about reports that the Islamic State group is even more brutal than the Taliban in areas they have captured from the former Afghan ruling group.
My son went to get wood from the mountain on his donkey to sell. He was very young, only 15. They fired 3 bullets in his chest. His name was Khalid.
Then, we will tell you about plans to grow industrial hemp in Malawi. Hemp and marijuana are from the same family of crops.
We think that if we go this direction, we might even surpass what we get from tobacco.
Every day here on As It Is, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Some Afghans say militants claiming to represent the Islamic State group are to blame for the worst incidents of brutality they have ever seen. The militants recently took control of parts of eastern Afghanistan from Taliban forces. The Taliban governed Afghanistan until the United States and its allies invaded the country 14 years ago. Now, Afghans say the militants are more violent than Taliban fighters. A VOA reporter traveled to Nangarhar province to talk to some of the victims. Abdul Malik carries a small picture of his son. He says Islamic State militants killed the boy.
My son went to get wood from the mountain on his donkey to sell. He was very young, only 15. They fired 3 bullets in his chest. His name was Khalid.
Hundreds of other people in eastern Afghanistan have been killed. The militants cut off the head of some victims. Others died in explosions. The victims include tribal leaders and members of security forces. They also include anyone who opposes the Islamic State. Others are targeted for no apparent reason. A VOA reporter spoke to a young man who witnessed some of the violence. He says he was almost beheaded by members of the group. He still fears the militants and does not want to be identified. He says the Islamic State accused him of being a border guard, seized him, and prepared to behead him. But individuals living in the area including older adults, stopped the group from killing him.
Locals, old people, old women intervened. They said to IS fighters, "He is a kid. Why are you beheading him?" They let me go. They killed the others who were there. Some they blew up, others they beheaded, and some they shot with guns. Allah saved me.
A video put on the internet by IS shows the group using a bomb to kill 10 men. Some of those killed were old. They were all members of the Shinvari tribe. Such violence has forced many to flee their homes, including one family that is now living in a tent. A member of their family was beheaded. A woman from the Shinvari tribe says after the execution, IS refused to return the body unless the family paid for it.
They were trying to sell even the dead body. They never gave his body back.
But IS fighters found another way to take the family's money. They seized the dead man's father and threatened to behead him. The family paid the militants and fled. In Malawi, the government has approved plans to grow industrial hemp for export on a trial or temporary basis. Jonathan Evans reports.
Industrial hemp and marijuana are from the same family of crops, but industrial hemp does not contain the psychoactive chemical agents found in marijuana, the plant known as chamba in Malawi. Last May, Parliament member Boniface Kazimira asked lawmakers to reconsider the plant's economic abilities. In his country, he says, people used to think that chamba caused madness and crime. He said, people now understand that industrial hemp is purely a money-making crop. Industrial hemp can be used to make paper, cloth, medicine, and even food products. But the government's decision has anti-drug campaigners worried. Nelson Zakeyu is director of Drug Fight Malawi, a local non-governmental organization.
That will just give an easy access to marijuana. The country will have so many problems. Some of the problems are gun shootings, suicides, as it is in some states in the U.S., like California.
Tony Burden is director of Herbarium, a South African company. He says industrial hemp is very different from marijuana.
We have to bring in the certified low-drug varieties, and they come from Europe, so we have to see if they're going to grow here in Malawi. If they don't grow, then we have to look around Malawi to see maybe there's also industrial hemp in Malawi, or we can see how we can make new varieties that grow well for Malawi's climate.
Joseph Ijidanti Malunga is deputy chairperson of the Parliamentary Committee on Agriculture. He told local radio that hemp will help the local economy.
I understand the money that it fetches is more than what tobacco would fetch on a given unit area. So we think that if we go this direction, we might even surpass what we get from tobacco.
But religious leaders disagree. Danala Jabuliga is with the Muslims Association of Malawi.
Whether it is going to boost the economy or not, it is not acceptable. There is no any permission Islam gives to any drug or something that will disturb the intelligence of a human being. So our recommendation is it should not be done.
The government has approved trial crops of industrial hemp starting next year at an agriculture research station in the capital, Lilongwe. I'm Jonathan Evans.
That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from the VOA Learning English Branch Headquarters in Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. A new study warns that too much time spent playing computer games could affect a child's performance at school. Britain's National Children's Bureau Northern Ireland reported the results of the study. They show that too many hours spent playing games can reduce students' chances of success in school. The National Children's Bureau explores issues affecting children and young people in the United Kingdom. The group's Northern Ireland office reported the results of a study called ICT and Me. The research project involved more than 600 individuals between the ages of 14 and 16. It took place over a period of 2 years, from 2012 to 2014. It is said to be the first ever long-term study in Northern Ireland on the influence of information technology on school test results. The study found that teenagers who played computer games less than once a week were more successful in school than those who played them twice a day or more. 41% of the students who used gaming devices two or more times a day received passing grades on school exams. That compared with 77% of those who rarely played the games. The study found that social media use did not affect school performance. Celine McStravick is the director of the National Children's Bureau, Northern Ireland. She says the study showed no connection between social media and test results. Many parents say their children are becoming increasingly dependent on computer games. Some have compared gaming to a drug addiction. However, the study did not explore addiction. But it did suggest that computer games can cause children to stay awake late at night. Less sleep makes children tired and unable to pay attention in school the next day. Mark Starkey is the owner of a video game arcade in London. He says another problem is that the new games are much different from older ones. For many years, the computer games industry has claimed there is no connection between games and addiction. But study organizers say more research is needed to establish the effect of computer game playing on performance at school. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
You can email comments to us at learningenglish@voanews.com. Give us a like on the VOA Learning English Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Learn English.
I'm Jonathan Evans.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The American Civil War in the 1860s was fought not only on land. There was a great deal of fighting between the Union and Confederate navies. This part of the war, the Sea War, is often forgotten, but it was important. The Union victory might not have been possible without the successes of its navy. Many battles took place just off the coast of the United States. Many others took place farther away in international waters. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe talk about the naval side of the Civil War.
As soon as the war started, President Abraham Lincoln wanted to block the South's major ports. He wanted to prevent the South from shipping its agricultural products to other countries in exchange for industrial goods. Lincoln's plan was good, but it had one major weakness. The Union Navy was too small for the job. The Confederate seacoast was long. It extended from Chesapeake Bay to Mexico, a distance of 5,600 kilometers. There were not enough ships in the Union Navy to blockade all of it. Many months would pass before the Union could build up an effective naval force.
The Confederacy had no navy at the start of the Civil War. The Confederate government had little money to create one, and the South had no factories to build one. For a while, the Confederacy was able to get warships from Britain. Then the Union put diplomatic pressure on Britain to stop this support. For the most part, the Confederacy depended on privately owned ships to get goods in and out of the South. About 20 of these private ships flew the Confederate flag. Most were very successful in the beginning. The Florida, for example, captured more than 30 ships before being captured itself off the coast of Brazil in 1864. The Alabama captured more than 60 ships. It was finally sunk in a battle with the Kearsarge off the coast of France. The Shenandoah sailed in the Pacific Ocean. It captured 40 ships. After the war ended, the Shenandoah tied up in Liverpool, England.
In addition to these victories, the Confederacy claimed responsibility for several new naval technologies during the Civil War. One was the first modern submarine. This ship was 10 meters long. It sank four times while being tested. It was raised each time and put back into service. One night, it fired its torpedoes at a much larger Union ship and sank it. But the explosion was so great that it tore apart the submarine, and it sank too. The Confederacy also developed very effective underwater explosive devices for use in the harbors.
Even with its victories and technologies, however, the Confederacy could not stop the Union Navy. The Union Navy was bigger to begin with and grew much faster. During the first 2 years of the Civil War, the Union captured several southern ports, Fort Hatteras and Roanoke Island, North Carolina, Port Royal, South Carolina, Pensacola, Florida, and perhaps most importantly, New Orleans, Louisiana. New Orleans lay near the mouth of the Mississippi River. It was the largest city in the South. It was the largest seaport. It had become a busy industrial center, producing war equipment for Confederate forces. If the Union could capture New Orleans, it would control the Mississippi River. President Lincoln appointed Navy officer David Farragut to lead the attack on New Orleans.
To reach the city, Farragut had to sail his ships past two Confederate forts on the Mississippi River. He shelled the forts for 6 days and nights, but the forts were so strong that the shells caused little damage. He decided not to wait any longer. One dark night, Farragut led 17 Union warships up the river in a line. The Confederate forces heard them and began to fire. One ship was sunk. Three others were damaged so badly that they could not continue. But 13 made it safely past the forts. When Farragut reached New Orleans, he found the city defenseless. Several thousand Confederate soldiers had fled. They knew they could not defend against the bigger Union force. Only civilians remained. Farragut captured New Orleans without a fight. The Confederate flag was lowered, and the United States flag was raised over the city.
Several weeks before Farragut captured New Orleans, a new kind of Navy battle was fought off Hampton Roads, Virginia. It was the first battle between iron ships. On the Confederate side was the Virginia. It had been built from what remained of a captured Union warship called the Merrimack. The Virginia was like no other warship ever seen in the world. It was 80 meters long. The part that showed above the waterline was built of wood 60 centimeters thick. This part was covered with sheets of iron 10 centimeters thick. 10 windows were cut into it. Behind each window was a cannon. In a battle, the windows would open, the cannons would fire, and the windows would close again. At the front was a sharp point of iron that could smash through the sides of wooden ships. The Virginia could not move fast, and it was difficult to control. It took almost 30 minutes to turn around. Still, there seemed to be no way to stop this iron monster. It already had destroyed two Union warships, and it was coming back for more.
The Union ship chosen to fight the Virginia was the Monitor. It, too, was covered with iron, but it was much smaller than the Virginia, and it carried only two cannons. These two cannons, however, were on a part of the ship that could turn in a complete circle. They could be aimed in any direction. The Monitor and the Virginia faced each other on the morning of March 9th, 1862. They moved in close, very close, then began to fire. A Confederate cannonball hit the iron side of the Monitor and bounced away. Union sailors cheered. The cannons of the Virginia could do no damage. But the Union sailors soon discovered that their cannons could do no damage either.
The men inside the two ships suffered from noise, heat, and smoke. The roar of their own cannons was extremely loud. Even louder was the crash of enemy cannonballs and explosive shells on the iron walls. Some of the men suffered burst eardrums. At least one man was struck unconscious from the force of a cannonball against the iron. The men quickly learned to stay away from the walls. Smoke from the cannons filled the ships. Then it floated out over the water. At times, the two ships could not see each other.
The Virginia and the Monitor fought for 3 hours. Neither ship scored an important hit. Neither suffered serious damage. Then the cannons of the Virginia fell silent. The Confederate ship had used up its gunpowder. It also had used up much of its fuel. It was lighter now and was floating higher in the water. A well-aimed cannonball could hit below its iron covering and sink it. The Confederate captain decided to withdraw. The Union captain, too, was ready to break off the battle. He decided not to follow. Neither ship could claim victory, but the Monitor had kept the Virginia from destroying more of the Union's wooden warships. The Virginia itself was to live just 2 more months. Union forces seized the Confederate Navy base at Norfolk, where the Virginia was kept, and the Iron Monster was sunk to keep it from falling into Union hands.
The battle at Hampton Roads between the Virginia and the Monitor was indecisive. It did not have much effect on the final result of America's Civil War, but it was still an important battle, for it marked the beginning of the end of the world's wooden navies. We will continue our story of the Civil War next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley and Christine Johnson. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs can be found along with historical images at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.